Welcome, everyone, to this Webster Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is KIX IPIC communication debugging. Today's presenters are Wayne Windsor and Sue Demaret. Wayne has been with KIX Level 2 support since 1988, specializing in the communications interface and other components of KIX. Sue has worked with KIX Level 2 support for the last 3 years, previously working as a system verification tester of NCP, VTAM, and SNA communications. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Sue. You may begin.
All right. Thank you, David, and thanks to everybody for joining us. Looking now at slide 2, you'll find our agenda for today. We'll be covering some basic information, including release-by-release information and compatibility. We'll talk about some service items, including newer messages and ABAN codes, and, of course, some vital APARs. Then we'll examine a couple of dumps and their associated traces for an IPIC session that is apparently hung. And finally, we'll discuss the performance of IPIC versus other protocols. And now, if you'll move on 2 slides to number 4. Here are some basic setup reminders for IPIC. You can only install one IPCon with the same Apple ID per network ID, but you can define your IPIC with the same Apple ID as the net name of another protocol like MRO or LU62. And if the IPCon matches the protocol name, then the Apple ID and net name must match as well. But one thing to keep in mind is that in that situation, KIX will prefer the IPCon over all other connection types. Moving on to slide 5. We'll see the evolution of the IPIC functionality. KIX introduced IPIC in V3R2 with distributed program link. In V4R1, we added transaction routing. In V4R2, we brought in function shipping of file control, transient data, and temporary storage. And finally, in V5R1, we have a connection heartbeat, CAPEX timeout. You can run the execution diagnostic facility to run step-by-step through your selected programs over IPIC and IMS thread-safe communication. Moving on to slide 6. We're going to talk about some of our functions, and these are for V4, R2, and later. We now have thread-safe IPIC mirrors, and this is the default, but you can change it so that it is more like the MRO communication. You can think of the SIP parameter as FCQR only, and you can think of this as file control runs on the QR only. Now, the default here is no for IPIC now, and like I said, you can change it to yes if you'd like it to have the same capability as our non-IPIC mirror function. There's a new mirror option for function shipping called mirror life, and you can use this setting to improve performance based on the type of workload that you run. You might be able to save processing time that's involved in building and taking down each mirror for each request or for each sync point. So this controls how often the KIX mirror task is invoked. So let's move on to slide number 7. Here we'll see how the mirror life can be configured. Now, typically, you would have a mirror task that runs as shortly as possible to keep down the number of tasks, and the sessions would be quickly freed. But in the case of multiple flows in a unit of work, the mirror should still exist until the end, till a sync point occurs. Now, you can get into trouble if performance can be affected if there are multiple consecutive read requests. In that case, the mirror gets built, a read and a response occurs, the mirror is torn down, and the session is freed, and that would happen for every request. And one way to save that, all that processing, is if you set mirror life to task. And then a single mirror is built, and it processes all of those requests before it is taken down, and the task goes all the way to completion. So setting mirror life to task is similar to setting MRO FSE, which is function shipping extended for MRO. And setting mirror life to UOW is similar to the MRO function or the MRO setting MRO LRM for long-running mirrors. So with Mirror Life, you can choose to keep the mirror task active for each request, each unit of work, or each task. But one thing to keep in mind, if you set Mirror Life to task, you probably wouldn't want to use that setting of task. That keeps the mirror open for the entirety of the task. You wouldn't want to do that when the request would kick off yet another task in the remote system, because in that case, that send session is going to be held for the duration of the entire task. So knowing your workload and setting Mirror Life appropriately may be able to save you some processing time. And now we'll move on to slide 8. This is one of our another one of our newer and more improved functions. This is transaction tracking. Transaction tracking began in V3R2 when information about remote incoming workflow was first collected. At first, this included how the task was attached and the information was available in CPSM and in the WUI. In 4.2, we increased the information that you could collect, and the information was also available with the Kix Explorer. The type of information that comes in is the adapter that the work flows in on and the previous hop data as well as hop counts. And transaction tracking is designed so that it can give you a better understanding of the work that's arriving. Okay, now we'll move on to slide number 9. This chart, and actually the one that follows after this, these give you some information about when you run with different regions, different levels of Kix in your configuration. And this is a fairly busy chart, but I wanted to mostly point out two items on this one. The first is in the upper left corner, circled in red. This is something that can be somewhat confusing if you're first running into it. In the case of two V3R2 regions running IPIC, if you have multiple connection types defined, if a DPL request were to come in and your IPCon is in released status, then the request will be rejected, and that is even if you have an existing MRO or LU6-2 connection that is available. That is something to look out for if you are running 3.2. And if you'll notice, the other item that's circled is in the lower right corner. This is for enhanced routing that's been added for Kix V4R2 and later. And moving on to slide 10. Here we have another even busier chart, and in this case, what I was highlighting here is in the lower right-hand corner, the IPIC functionality that is available now in Kix TS4.2 and 5.1 includes the function shipping of file control, transient data, and temporary storage. Of course, both of your partners to the communication would have to be at those levels or higher. All right, moving on to slide number 11. We are going to talk a little bit about service. And on slide 12, here are some new messages that occur, of course, since there are regions that are perhaps at different levels. The first message that you have here, this highlights if you happen to have one partner that does not support the functionality of the information that's coming over from the other partner. So if you have two different release levels, you should, and you're trying to send a function that is not supported at one of them, you should see this message. The next messages are new messages, but I wanted to highlight here that the term ID in these file control messages can now refer to an IPIC session, but you might see 4 question marks, and this will be instead of a term ID. And what this means is that the request was functioned. The request was function shipped over an IPCon. Moving on to slide 13. These are a couple of our newer admin codes. When a mirror transaction performs a read into request, it has to get the storage itself. And when it tries to get storage and the get main fails, these are two admin codes that you might see. The first, the AXF2, is when the get main failure results in a purge, and AXF3 is when it does not. And now we're going to talk about a couple of fixes, well, more than two. And at this point, I'll turn the presentation over to Wayne.
So if we can move on to slide 14. This is a set of fixes that deal with the adapter fields that are involved in the transaction tracking process that Sue mentioned earlier. The adapter process, the tracking, is a background process that cannot be altered by configuration. It's always there and it's always on. It is now just part of CICS. And so these kinds of problems can crop up no matter whether you're trying to use it or not, because it's always there. The majority of the symptoms were discovered and fixed in release 4.2, and so those are the majority of the APAR numbers that we see here on this slide and what I'm going to talk to. I'd like to talk first about the second one in the list, PM59545. The initial error found there was a DFH AP0002, a severe error code 4EZ12. However, it turned out that what was going on under the covers was a problem where various parts of CICS thought that it was dealing with adapter fields and the transaction tracking process, when in fact it was not. Many of these errors were coming out of our transformer process as it was moving from one CICS region to another, and depending on what area of CICS depended on that information, they would make invalid assumptions of what was going on and cause problems. Because any area of CICS could receive that invalid information, the results became unpredictable. While the APAR is not marked as hyper, we strongly advise that this APAR's PTF be applied to your systems to avoid these unaccountable errors. The rest of the APARs are all directly connected to the adapter data processing. In each case, we determined that what each problem was and fixed it, and even though they may not have been directly related or causing the next error, because they were all in the same code and we wanted to make sure as each one was discovered that all of them were being brought in, they were put into a PE chain. And so PM55512 was PE by PM62458. That was in turn PE'd by 65514, and then finally 67638. 67638 at that time was marked as hyper to make sure that all of these fixes were being brought into the system. Unfortunately, that APAR itself went PE and was fixed by the final APAR 75335. When that APAR was closed, rather than just pre-wrecking the previous and PEing the previous ones, it superseded those. So the only thing that you have to put on is the PTF for PM75335. And that's the case then for release 5.1 as well. Only one APAR is needed, PM77543. Apply its fixing PTF, and you will receive all of the fixes that you need to settle down this area of our code. I turn the time back over to Sue.
Okay, thank you. And if we advance to slide number 15, these are a couple of fixes that relate to how KIX will behave when it has an unresponsive partner. In the first APAR, PM59370 and 62347, this was a case where a communication partner abruptly terminated without letting KIX know, and the IPCON could enter into a freeing state forever, and that would require a recycle to reset your IPCON. This was also PE fixed by Hyper PM74806, and then you'll see the second one, 84331, which is still open. Second, APAR involves the keep alive setting in TCPIP, and previous to this fix, if you implemented TCPIP keep alive, the default timeout period was 120 minutes, and That's a really long time, so this fix provides a 120-second timeout instead. This is not a user-adjustable setting. And just so you know, you can enable the TCP/IP keep alive function by setting set socket opt name equals SO underscore keep alive within the application. And this is a setting within TCP/IP, not KIX. But if implemented in TCP/IP, KIX will observe this 120-second timeout period. Both of these fixes were found in version 4, but they were propagated back to V3R2. Okay, moving on to slide number 16. Here we'll see some important fixes for other hung and disrupted conditions. The first, PM54488 or 60165. In this one, there were tasks that were hung waiting for receive sessions, and all the sessions were held by tasks that were no longer around. The second, PM56081, this occurs when we were attempting to change the state of a busy IPCon through CEMT, and both CEMT and all the tasks running on the IPCon could end up in a hung state. And the third is 75241 and several others, including 80715. 80715 is still open. This is a hyperfix for another severe error that may require a recycle to overcome. Okay, moving on to slide number 17. This is our last slide on some APARs that you should consider. Both of these are still open. However, they're probably worth watching, and you might consider subscribing to these. The first addresses IPCon state changes, which currently aren't reported. This fix will provide messages in the KIX log for state changes for your IPCon. And the second should provide a performance boost. What was happening here with the KIX code was modified to avoid an exclusive lock situation, and it was a bottleneck in a very busy system. And in this case, the code was modified so that it avoids the lock entirely. So hopefully that will get things processing a little faster. These APARs are among the most recent, of course, but we encourage everyone running with IPIC to implement recent maintenance and to check back frequently for fixes. And on that note, I will turn our presentation over to Wayne for our debugging section.
If we could move to slide 18, please. And so we will now begin on the debugging portion of how to actually look at documentation to try to determine why things might be going wrong with a task that's involved with an IPIC session. As Sue mentioned, until APAR PM65433 closes, the IPIC messages are not currently as helpful as we would have liked. The dumps and traces are some of the best ways of looking at why a problem happened. Slide 19. And so we're going to start by looking at dumps, how to look at a dump to determine what's going on around an IPIC session. Slide 20. We did a presentation a couple of years ago that mentioned how to correlate work in the dump of one session with what was going on with another session. The IPCS formatting at release 4.2 has improved a little bit to help with that, so it's not quite as difficult to find that identifying information. So in order to find the hung information, we need to start with the side that is showing a wait on an IPIC session. And so we do that in the DS domain task summary. Slide 21. So we start by identifying the tasks that are waiting on the IPIC sessions. I've reduced the number of columns showing here so that the pertinent information is showing. The actual summary is quite a bit wider than this, but these are the columns that we refer to find out what's going on. First of all, looking at the resource type and the resource name, we can see that the first three tasks are hung in IS receive waits. This indicates that those tasks are waiting to receive information across an IPIC session. Luckily for us, the resource name provides both the IPCon name and the IP sessions identifier there. So in this case, the A25 is the IPCon name, and the /AAB, AAD, and AAC are the session names that are involved. As with any wait, you get to see how long it's been suspended, and the final numbers in the XM transaction token shows what the task number is. I've also included here, just for completeness, the TRAN ID from the KE domain, showing that these were all from a task named REMR. The next two tasks you'll see are in IS underscore allocate weights. This is similar to any allocate weight you see for other communications, where we're waiting to allocate a session to A25. In this particular case, of course, we only set up three sessions, and any additional requests would then begin waiting once those three were full. Slide 22, please. So once we've identified the task numbers that are involved with IPIC sessions, we then go to the IS domain to see what's going on with them. In the summary, we have various pieces of information. The ISSB address, for those who may be familiar with VTAM interfaces and MRO and looking in the TCP section of a dump, the ISSB is equivalent to a TCTTE. It indicates what IPCon each is related to and then gives you the type and socket information. With release 4.2, CICS under the covers now provides two sockets and lists which socket each session is involved with. So the ones and twos in that indicate which socket that particular session is using. Since there were three sessions, it has assigned one of them to socket one and two of them to socket two. The type S indicates that these are send sessions. And then we get to see the name of the session that's in use. And now the new information that's put into the summary that didn't used to be there is the conversation ID. And we can use that information to directly correlate what's going on in the traces and to what's happening up to a particular task in a related dump. Of course, the task number is there, and then the status of that particular session is listed there. You'll notice that these send sessions are all in receive mode. That might be a little confusing at first, but basically what that means is that the request has already been sent to the partner, and we are now waiting to receive the response back, and so the send session goes into receive mode for that. Moving on to slide 23. Slide 23 represents the information that we see in the connected region. So slide 23 we've now moved to the back end of the dump of the back end region that the front end region was waiting on. We start, because we're going to correlate the information from the front end to the back end region, we now start in the IS domain rather than in the dispatcher domain. And here we can see then in the summary, we can find the conversation IDs that exactly match those that were in the front end's dump. From that then, we can go to the left and right picking up the other information that we need. That these are received sessions, again assigned to either sockets 1 or 2, the names of those sessions that are involved, and then to the right what the transaction's name is, in this case the mirror task, CSMI, and which task numbers are involved with it. And again, the state is a send mode. Once again, the receive sessions are in send mode because we've already received the information in from the partner And our next step would be to send information back to the partner so those receive sessions sit in receive mode until that. Those receive sessions are in send mode until that happens. We can move on then to slide 24. So once we have that information of which tasks are involved that match the tasks that we're waiting in the other side, we can now go to the dispatcher domain and see what the status of those particular tasks are. Looking in the XM transaction token to the right, we're able to find and identify those tasks and look to see what the status of those are. In our particular case, each one was trying to access a resource named FCDSRECD of a type of an NQ. Now, this could be anything. At this point, if you're looking at a problem in your own systems, you would have to follow on whatever path that analysis takes you. In this particular case, we had an NQ for all three of those tasks. And for completeness, then, I want to just complete why these tasks are waiting. We'll go ahead and continue with this particular example. Since the three are in NQ waits, then we want to go to the NQ, Nancy Queen, domain. So if we can go to slide 25. Once we're in there, we find the FCDSRECD NQ pool, and we'll see that the three tasks, the numbers are there, 123, 124, and 125, are all waiters for a resource within that pool known as AAAA. And the owner of that is a TRAN ID known as RDUP with a transaction, a task number of 122. Now that we know what resource the tasks are waiting for, we can, and who the owner of that is, we can go back to the DS domain to see why the owning task is not releasing that particular resource. So if we could go on to slide 26, we'll see that that task, number 122, is in a resource type weight of an IC weight. An IC weight indicates that an exec CICS delay command has been issued, and the time is not up yet for that particular wait. This is obviously a bit contrived. We did this test just to cause those tasks to wait, but you would need to figure out whatever was going on in your particular region as to why things were being held. And with that, we can go on to slide 27. And we will switch from looking at dump and control block information to what you can do with traces to follow with problems in with IPIC data. And let's move on then to slide 28. Sometimes you may be able to look within the internal trace of a dump to see what's leading up to whatever the error is that you're trying to look at, or you may be dealing with a problem that doesn't produce a dump and you need to gather an auxiliary trace of the process to see what's going on. In either case, there are two domains that are traced that are very important to the IPIC process. The first is the IS domain. This is shared with IRC, or MRO as it's known, and we'll trace the actual IPIC process itself. But IPIC uses sockets, as we've mentioned before, and so the sockets domain information is also important. One thing to note is that both of these domains use a cumulative effect on the traces. What that means is that a level 2 trace will not be taken unless the level 1 trace is also in force. And that's because within the code first checks to see if a level 1 trace is active. If it's not, it skips all trace processing after that. And so in order to get a level 2 trace with a level of information to show some details, you would need to have both of these set to 1-2. And with that, let's look at some of the trace points that can provide information about the processing that's going on. So if we can move on to slide 29. We're going to start by looking at, once again, the front end to see how things are put together to be sent over to the back end. We're assuming at this point that the IPIC session has already been allocated to the task and that a request has been made to send information across to the partner. The first trace point that's important to us is the IS-200, which indicates what the overall request to the IPIC process is. In this case, it's a converse, which includes both a send and a receive. And so the next trace point, IS-0700, is the initial actual process that it's going to do to start on that, which is a send request. We can see that it provides several pieces of pertinent information for us. The one is the ISSB's name, in this case, /AAB, seen there on the third line below the header. And also, importantly, the conversation ID. This was matches that same conversation ID that we saw listed in the ISSB summary in the dump. There's also provided is the previous conversation ID, so that if you're following through a series of requests in a trace, you can see what your current request is and what had happened before to be able to back up and look and see what's going on there. Slide 30, please. The next trace that can be helpful is the IS-0716 that provides the IPIC header that's being built to actually send the data across. You can see that some of the same information is available, but additionally, we have the message sequence number. This is the same kind of thing that you would see if you were following flows across a VTAM network where the message sequence numbers go up as each request is made. And we can use this sequence number to positively identify the matching flow as it's arriving in the partner. There's also the chaining sequence number and an indication of which position in the chain that data exists. What happens is if there are a large amount of data is sent that can't be fit into a single buffer, then the sequence is broken up into a series of chains, begin chains, middle end chains, and last end chain. And this indicates what the last in chains chain sequence number is. In this case, we had a fairly small piece of data, and it all fit into a single sequence. And this is the very first thing being sent across, so it's sequence number 1. We can move to slide 31. As I mentioned before, CICS IPIC process uses sockets to send that information across, and it can be helpful to see what information is being sent, the actual information that flows across the network. This trace point SO0201 is sort of equivalent to the VTAM interface's VIO trace entry, where you can actually see the data itself. I've eliminated the hex values here just to make the eye catcher easier to see. We can see the header information that's being sent across. I've highlighted in red the conversation ID that we saw in both dumps. This is where that information is passed from the one side to the other, and the TRAN ID that is being requested to be sent. And so this is where you would see the actual data flowing across the network, SO0201. We can move on then to slide 32. Finishing up then on the front end, we see that the task is going into a wait with the resource type IS_receive and the resource names A25 and /AAB that wind up sitting in those positions in the dispatcher domain of the dump. And we can see that, that you can find out that that's what happened within the trace, if, even if you don't have a dump available to you. Going on to slide 33, we'll now move over to a trace of the back end. And where the front end of the IPIC process builds things up and sends it across the socket domain, on the back end, things are received by the socket, and then the IPIC process will unwind those things for the task to use. And so the first thing that we see is the socket domain's SO0202 information, where when a request is being sent, you can see the information as it enters into the socket process. It's not visible in the trace on the back end until we're exiting the socket process. So in this case, we can see that information in the SOC exit instead of the SOC entry. So it's in, you know, it's kind of important as you're looking through those traces to realize where you can go to look at the data. As you're sending information, it's in the, on the entry, 0201, and as you're receiving the information, it's on exit in the 0202. Again, we can see the conversation ID and the task ID that's, trend ID that's going to be attached is there in the data. Moving on to slide 34. The IPIC process then needs to unwind that data. It has some slightly different trace points that you can find that information in. In this case, the 062 Charlie provides us with the conversation ID, and here we see then those important sequence numbers and last and chain sequence IDs, along with, of course, a temp a timestamp that you could see in the header. You could very positively identify a piece of information that's being sent out in the front end's trace with the exact piece of information that's being received in the back end's trace, and know that you're dealing with that specific request. Slide 35, please. While this is a little bit of overkill, it might be important to identify early on in the process exactly which of the sessions on the back end is going to be used on the receive of information. And the IS0801 trace point is where we have completed the allocate of the session to the task that's going to be used. And in a full format of the trace in data field 4, we can actually see what the identifier is, in case that's important earlier on in the trace for whatever it is you're doing. If we go on to slide 36, we'll see that go on to slide 37. So those two slides have gotten out of order somehow. So in slide 37, we see that the trace point IS0602 now externalizes into the header some of that information that we may need. We can see the ISSB's name / AAI is now externalized in the header information itself, the IP con that it's related to. We can see that we're receiving data that's a length of 51 bytes long, what the TCP/IP service and port number are, the conversation ID is listed, and the TRAN ID and task number that's going to be associated with this process. We can back up then to slide 36. We'll see then that this particular task then made an enqueue request for an argument of AAAA, that it got an exception response saying that that was busy, and so then we go into the wait for a suspend with resource type enqueue and the resource name of FCDSRECD. Those were the things that wound up in the dump in the dispatcher domain. So you can see this information in the trace even if you don't have a dump. If we can move forward two slides to 38. In summary then, we can see that both dumps and traces can provide much useful information about what's going on with a task that's using IPIC communications. This could be useful for application programmers as well as system programmers just to make sure that the flow of their application across those links are doing the kinds of things they expect it to do. It's also interesting that the IPIC process is now available for use by the WebSphere message broker and the CICS transaction gateway. And since they don't share in CICS's same kinds of dumps and trace information, this can be very helpful to view the details of the flows going to and from these other products. So a trace can be used to capture it at dump time, or an auxiliary trace can be used if you can recreate what it is you need to do. And with that, I'll conclude the debugging session and turn the time back to Sue.
Okay, thank you very much. Moving on to slide 39, we're going to talk about performance for a bit. And I guess you can go ahead and advance to slide 40. What we're going to be talking about here are the results of a few performance tests that were meant to illustrate how IPIC performs versus LU62 and to some extent to MRO with a typical workload running. And there are four sets of graphs that I'm going to show you, one for transaction routing, one for function shipping, and there'll be two for DPL. Hopefully this will give you an idea of the expected performance of IPIC compared to other protocols. So moving on to slide 41, here's a look at the environment. I'll let you read the specifics of this, but basically we used KIX 4.1 and for function shipping 4.2. Hypersockets was in use for some of the IPIC connections, as you'll see on the upcoming configuration charts, and Hypersockets is a hardware feature that provides a high-performance internal communication between LPARs in a single sysplex. There's also a coupling facility required for MRO, which will also be seen on some of the charts that actually give a picture of the configuration. So, on slide 42, please. These are some of the specifics of the workload that was run. This was a COBOL VSAM workload. Static routing was used as opposed to dynamic for the transaction routing test. Similar mirror settings were used for either mirror life or for MRO, FSE, or MRO, LRM. And you can see the breakdown of the different types of requests that were function shipped. Moving to slide 43. Here's what the IPIC connectivity looks like. As you see, there's within an LPAR, we're using fast local sockets, which fast local sockets basically provides an efficient path through the TCP/IP stack because the local requests aren't routed through the distributing stack. We have hypersockets between two LPARs on the same sysplex, and for cross sysplex connections, there is the OSA Express 3 connection. And moving on to slide 44, we'll see the XRF MRO and LU62 connectivity. There's, of course, a coupling facility for MRO and OSA Express 3 adapters for running LU62. So on slide 45, we're going to be moving to somehow how the individual tests were set up. This is for the first one for transaction routing. And here we have the two terminal owning regions are in a separate LPAR from the application and file owning regions. And moving on to slide 46, we'll see the graph of how these different protocols performed. And I'll give you a few moments to look over this chart. So as you can see here, of course, MRO, XEF is labeled here, is somewhat faster. However, you can see that IPIC is very comparable to LU62 in this transaction routing case. So moving on to slide 47, here we have some of the key points of this particular test. Of course, XCF MRO is faster. You must have a coupling facility for that. But the response times are, and I think you'll see that here for most of these tests, the response times are similar or better than LU62. So moving on to slide number 48. This is a description of the second test. This is function shipping, our function shipping setup. Here we were sending file control requests to a file-owning region that was in a separate LPAR. And we'll move to our graph, and I'll again pause a moment for everyone to take a look on slide 49. Again, in this case, we can see that MRO is a faster protocol. Of course, that has to be within the same system, so and you must have the coupling facility. But compared to LU62, we have a fairly positive picture here. Do keep in mind that we were using the mirror life setting of task for these function ship requests, which is one of those things that we spoke of earlier that you can help tune your performance and perhaps get better performance if you set mirror life to task so that the mirror task isn't opened and closed repeatedly. And moving on to slide 50, here we are with some of the key points for this particular test. And now we can move on to slide 51. This will describe the next two tests that were performed. These are for a test of the distributed program link. We did this with two different payloads, one of 32K and one of 1K. And this was the test that was performed was for these five get and put containers. Moving on to slide 52. You can see in this case that IPIC is actually outperforming with this 32K payload. IPIC is actually outperforming LU62 fairly well, and I'd like to highlight, if you look at the hypersockets, if you look at the pink areas here, this shaded part of the graph actually is processing that can be offloaded to a zip if you happen to have one in your configuration. So that is processing that actually could be, you could save some on that as well. Moving to slide 53, and here we have the comparison of the same DPL test. However, this is with a 1K payload. And if we advance to slide 54, here are some of the key points here. Of course, IPIC outperforms LU62 fairly substantially with the larger payload, and also of note is that IPIC processing can be offloaded. And on the next slide, number 55, this basically shows how zip usage is affected when the offload grows with a higher transaction rate. And that is something that you can consider if you have a zip in your configuration and were to offload some of this processing. So hopefully these charts give you an idea of how IPIC performance versus the other protocols. And with that, we will move on to slide 56 and summarize what we've been over today. Okay, we talked about IPIC enhancements and compatibility with some very busy reference charts. We looked at new messages and codes as well as some important fixes. In the debugging section, we examined a hung session in a dump and looked at IPIC trace points. And, of course, the suggestion is to remember to gather documentation from both sides if you have an IPIC problem, particularly with hung sessions, because we needed to be able to look at both partners to see what states they're in. And for data-related problems, be sure to that you can recreate, be sure to turn on IS and SO to standard level tracing 1-2. We also touched on performance, and that concludes the bulk of our presentation. So moving on to slide 57. Here we have some additional information that you can access online, including where to look for future technical exchanges, as well as demos and tutorials. And with that, I will turn our presentation back over to David.
Thank you, Sue and Wayne, for a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE subscribe to get a list of mailing lists and to subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled or if you have have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We do welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, Debbie, we would like to open the lines for questions. Go through a couple of questions that came in through the group chat. The first one was on slide 33. It was mentioned that the time value should match the time value from the front end kicks. Do you mean that the time value should logically match, or does that time value actually represent a value passed to the back end kicks in the message?
That's just a logical match. In other words, if something's being sent, you wouldn't want to match it with something, another trace that was 5 or 10 minutes away. It's just a way of verifying that you're actually looking at the same information that's moving across.
Okay, thank you. And then that same person posted a comment that says, it is not true that you need a coupling facility for XCF MRO. XCF links, for example, Sysplex links, are sufficient. Do you have a comment for that?
No, I'll have to take a look at that and get back. Do you have an email that we can take offline?
No. However, I'm going to put the presentation on the first chart.
Okay.
If anyone needs to contact Wayne or Sue, their email addresses are on this first chart of the presentation.
Okay, and I will make updates as needed for that.
Well, I would say, though, that that was what was used in our test.
Okay, then there's another question. TX series KIX supports lowercase Apple IDs for regions, but the IPCon definition on KIX TS for ZOS does not accept a lowercase Apple ID. Exec KIX create can be used to define IPCon with lowercase Apple ID. Auto install will also work with lowercase Apple ID. Both of these workarounds require programming. Is there any relief on the way?
I'm not familiar with that particular issue.
And he went on to say, in case it wasn't clear, my question pertains to an IPCon connection between TX series KIX on AIX and KIX TS for ZOS.
Right, I'm familiar with the TX series. Is he connecting through the CICS transaction gateway to CICS to get that functionality?
He doesn't say.
Okay.
But if he's listening on the phone, I would encourage him to send you an email with some more details.
Okay.
Yes, that would be great, because we do have a process for submitting requests for enhancements if that is something that he is interested in, if that hasn't been done already.
Okay, here's a question. Do the performance charts reflect the use of HPO option for the VTAM?
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, I've got it. I'll have to admit that I don't know for sure, but it is more than likely that we were using the high-performance option during that time. That would be a standard setup for any of our tests.
Okay. Thank you.
If you would like to ask a question, you may press star then one. Please record your first and your last name clearly when prompted. To withdraw your request, you may press star two. One moment, please.
I do have an update.
Okay. Go ahead, Sue.
I have gotten some information from our XCF, another of my coworkers has rung in. This is coming from one of our publications, and I can actually post this in our information that goes along with this. I'll try to make a note of it in the presentation in one of the slides to be updated. In order for TCP/IP to take advantage of inter-LPAR communication, VTAM must already have a cross-system coupling facility communications active. VTAM uses XCF to establish a common membership group. So that is for TCP/IP communicating over dynamic XCF connections. I can research this a little more as well, and if I'm sent an email, we can try to respond to that and get some more information about where the information is that was located and the information that the caller has.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Wayne and Sue, for presenting today.
Okay, thank you very much.
Glad to do it.
Thank you. This concludes today's presentation. You may disconnect at this time.